After stuffing drunken Benedict and Byron into their Range Rovers and instructing their drivers not to stop until they were on the other side of the island, I kissed Louisa farewell. I promised to call her next time I was in England, a promise I had every intention of fulfilling. When our guests were gone, I snuck into the garden and smoked 3 rollies in a row, checking if I had any text messages or phone calls from the States, specifically from a certain American vixen. I did not. She is too bloody broken, and you aren't in any danger of winning any sanity awards anytime soon either. I drudged back into the sprawling dark mansion through the back kitchen, passing Drew snoring in front of the telly in one of the drawing rooms, and Cece sitting at the grand piano, staring at it silently without playing. Fuck her, impregnate her, and forget about her. Things were looking dire on all fronts. I headed to what used to be my father's office. My mother was there. She looked to be in her natural habitat behind his Victorian desk, scribbling in the margins of some documents while typing numbers on a calculator next to her. It reminded me what I knew to be the truth for years, that my mother was indeed the operating force behind the Whitehall Empire. My father was a rake with a title, while Ursula was her father's smart and resourceful daughter. Tony Dodkin might have been a common earl, but he was a math genius and a real estate mogul who knew his way around a good deal. Mum took after him. She was extremely capable. Which begged the question, how had she not known that he was abusing me? But opening that old wound wasn't going to do much help. "Devi, my love," she let out a little sigh, putting a pen down and tilting her head up with a smile, like a flower stretching and opening for the sun. "Do sit down." I took a seat in front of her, gazing at the portrait behind her, Papa and myself, when I was a boy of maybe 4 or 5. We both looked so utterly miserable and out of place, the only thing connecting us was DNA, our sharp Nordic features and glacial eyes. "The conservatory is dusty," I drawled.
"Is it now?"
She licked her finger before flipping a page on the document in front of her.
"Well, I must tell the cleaners to pay extra attention to the room tomorrow."
"Are you having financial issues?" She was still frowning at the number splayed on the paper.
"Oh, Devi, must we talk about finances? It's so very common. You just got here. I want us to brunch and to catch up properly. Maybe catch a horse race."
"We'll do all of that, Mummy, but I need to know that you're taken care of."
"We'll survive."
She looked up, offering me a wobbly smile. "When's the reading of the will, exactly? Tomorrow or the next day?"
"Actually,"
she finished writing a sentence on a document, setting her pen down,
"the reading of the will be severely delayed, I'm afraid."
"Severely?" I arched an eyebrow. "Why?"
"Mr. Tyndall is currently abroad."
Harry Tyndall was my late father's trusted solicitor. "And you failed to mention that before I boarded a plane?" She smiled thoughtfully, staring at my hair like she wanted to swipe her motherly fingers across it lovingly.
"I guess you could say the opportunity to see you presented itself, and the human that I was, I yielded to temptation. I'm sorry."
Her eyes shone with unshed tears.
"Terribly so."
That soothed my anger. "Shush, Mum. I'm here for you." I reached across the desk and grabbed a hand. She was frail under my touch. "I'll wire you money to tide you over until the reading of the will," I heard myself say.
"No, darling, we couldn't possibly."
"Of course you could. You're my mother. It's the least I can do for you." For a moment, all we did was stare at each other, drinking every new line and wrinkle we'd accumulated in the last year. "I hear Drew leaves much to be desired in the making Cecilia happy department." I sprawled in my seat, crossing my ankles over the desk. My mother picked up her pen again and scribbled on the edges of the file, gnawing on her lower lip, as she did whenever my father was up to no good, and she knew she was about to clean up his mess.
"Quite."
"What can I do to help?"
There's nothing you can do, really. That is for your sister to handle.
Cece is not used to taking care of such things. Understatement of the fucking century. When we were kids, I got into hot water on a daily basis to save my sister's arse. Mum tugged at her lower lip, mulling this over.
All the same, it is time for her to start learning how to hold her own. The only thing you can do for me now is refrain from providing us with any scandalous headlines. We certainly don't need those.
In that moment, my mother looked so broken, so tired, so weathered by the tragedies life had thrown at her. I couldn't crush her completely. Not when there was so little hope left for her. Which was why I couldn't tell her I was planning to impregnate a ditzy burlesque club owner out of wedlock, who, by the way, was sprawled on billboards all over the East Coast, positively naked. But Belle wasn't even pregnant. What was the point of telling my mother about this? This situation could be revisited in 3, 4, or 5 months, when the dust on my father's grave had settled. No need to give my mother more bad news. No scandalous headlines, I grinned back at her. Promise. Chapter 7. Devon. Devon. Still ovulating? Belle. 6 days later? Do I look like an African driver ant? I had to Google the reference to learn that the average African driver ant produced 3 to 4 million eggs each month and was considered to be the most fertile animal on planet Earth. Devon. Not from this angle. Get on your knees with your bum up and hold a crumb of bread, just so I can be sure. Belle. Why are you asking anyway? Trying to conceive tonight couldn't hurt our chances, correct? Technically not, but said chances would be slim. Slim, but in existence. Are you waiting for an invitation? From your ill-mannered arse? No. I'm already on my way. This is going to stop as soon as I'm pregnant. Absolutely. I mean it. I already feel personally attacked by your presence in my life. No point asking why you hate men so much, I suppose. None, if you want a straight, honest answer. Understood. Consider yourself rid of me as soon as you're with child. With child. You embarrass my soul. I'm waiting at Madame Mayhem. I'm pulling over. Do not wear knickers. I didn't even bother getting into the shower after landing at Boston Logan International Airport. I cabbed it straight to Madame Mayhem, relying on my good friends, mint gum and deodorant. The entire journey from England to America, all I could think about was burying myself inside the voluptuous, hot-headed woman. I was not completely sure where my fascination with Emmabel stemmed from, but if I were to take a wild guess, I'd say it was because she was genuinely independent. She did not rely on a wealthy man, unlike her sister and friends, and seemed completely unfazed to be the only single person in the room, other than myself, even when things got awkward. She was outspoken, fierce, and confident. She was also a stunner. In the cab on my way to Belle, I wired my mother a handsome amount of money. Just as I was about to tuck the device back to my pocket, a message popped on the screen. Unknown number. Are you still home? Lou, X. Louisa and I had exchanged phone numbers before she left Whitehall Court Castle after my father's funeral. Since I didn't want to repeat my ghosting mistake twice, I added her to my contacts and answered her. Devon. Back in Boston, but I'll be headed to Britain for the reading of the will. Lunch? Louisa. And drinks? Devon. I never say no to those. Louisa. Good. Then I'll make sure to crack open that Remy Martin cognac. When I got to Madame Mayhem, I cut the 400-yard line, slapped a few Benjamins on one of the bouncers' chest, and sauntered in, leaving a trail of disgruntled people behind me. I found Belle manning the bar again, serving beers and flinging her blonde hair behind a shoulder. She was clad in a top that looked like creme, ripped bodice, and cherry red leather pants I was soon going to destroy with my teeth. Goodbye to my promise of no scandals. It was good while it lasted. A couple days and some change. Zeroing in on her, I made my way across the club, shouldering past people dancing and drunkenly laughing into each other's ears. Belle was so wrapped up in serving her customers, she didn't even glance my way when she asked, "What can I get for you, honey?" Honey? The woman was a national embarrassment. What on earth propelled me to put a baby in her? Bend over on all fours while wearing nothing but a sultry expression while begging me to fuck you. Her head twisted as shock flashed across her beautiful face. Her glare melted into an amused smile. "I have 20 more minutes here." Her hands moved quickly behind the bar. She seemed in no hurry to cater to me, the exact opposite of Louisa. "No, you don't. You'll be waiting for me in your office in no more than 10 minutes, buck naked and in the position I want you in." "Or?" She snorted, angling the soda gun in my direction threateningly. "Or?" I grabbed the soda gun from across the bar and shoved it into a cleavage right between her tits, lowering my voice an octave, my lips hovering over the shell of her ear. "I will see to it that you spend the night with your good friend, Magic Wand." "At least the Magic Wand doesn't make idle promises," she whispered back. I pushed the button and sprayed cold Diet Coke between her breasts. Bubbles spilled over from her push-up bra. She let out a squeak, pushing me away.
"What do you think you're doing, asshole?"
"Standing up to you, unlike all the other poor sods you pick as your lovers," I said dryly.
"Withholding sex from me as punishment is your idea of standing up to me?"
She let out a wild laugh, leaning down to grab a cloth and patting her chest dry.
"Dude, you're high. I can get it anytime I want it, anywhere I want it."
No arguments there. "But it's not sex you are after, Swevin. It is a child, and I know I'm the only one who'll do." I took a step back, glancing at my watch. "I have a conference call with Tokyo. I'll see you in 10.
"You're going to pay for that little stunt," she warned,
slapping the cloth against the bar. She threw more threats into the air, but I was already gone, accepting the call Joanne connected me to. The call did not take more than 4 minutes. While Emmabelle wrapped things up, I wrote an email to my late father's solicitor, Mr. Tyndall, to see when the reading of the will would happen. Worry gnawed at my gut. Mum and Cece were in trouble. I was careful to let Emmabelle wait an extra 8 minutes before I pushed open the door to her office. She was waiting for me on her desk, which was littered with paperwork, envelopes, and a laptop, exactly as I requested, naked and on all fours. She faced the wall, not the door, her yellow hair spilling in sheets across her back. At the sound of the door clicking open, she whipped her head around. I tisked, arse up and eyes on the wall. "I've heard better dirty talk from decorative houseplants, but I'm having too much fun to kick you out." She turned back toward the wall. I locked the door and strode into the room unhurriedly. Her pert arse was high in the air, the center of her pink and already glistening. She was ready for me, and I was going to take my sweet time enjoying her. I stopped in front of her, silently admiring every perfect curve of her. Emmabelle Penrose was exquisite, to a point she needn't work a day in her life if she wished to. She could marry into fortune. Yet she hadn't.
"You still there?" she groaned.
Secretly, her deliberately bad grammar amused me, even though the same trait grated on my nerves on anyone else. "Patience." I rolled my knuckles over the side of her arse, the touch so brief, so fleeting. Her entire body flushed and her back arched as if I'd stuffed my cock into her.
"You're such a tease," she moaned. "Knock me up already."
"With pleasure." I bit the side of her bum softly, my teeth sinking into her derriere like it was a juicy peach. I pried the lips of her pussy open with my thumbs from behind and licked her slit, using the tip of my tongue to drive her mad. Ah, she drowsed, letting her head drop as her arms began to shake. Plastering a hand over the small of her back to lower her upper body, I pushed her open even wider, licking in long, deep strokes. I drank her sweetness, watching as she thrashed her head, stifling her little grunts of pleasure just to spite me. Her knees were shaking. She was liquid fire, every inch of her body scorching with arousal.
Oh, oh, shit, shit, fuck,
she murmured. The future mother of my child, ladies and gentlemen. My lady, I drawled sarcastically, my fingers wrapping around the flesh of her arse tighter, licking her more fervently. She came so violently she fell flat on her stomach across the desk.
Damn,
she plastered her sweaty forehead to the desk. That's never happened to me before. That was fast. Better you than me. I gave her rear a patronizing little pat.
Holy crap, dude. Did you use some kind of trick? That was intense.
Rather than answer her observation, I flipped her on her back and grabbed the back of her knees, dragging her across the desk until her bum was perched on its edge, wrapping her bare legs around my waist. She unbuckled me. The glee in which her hands moved told me she was more than glad I was back on American soil.
Are you ever going to be fully naked when we have sex?
She teased, her tongue circling patterns along my neck. You're the one who wants to keep it detached. My bored tone did not match the monstrous erection the woman in front of me had just freed out of my trousers, or the rush of erotic excitement coursing through me.
Fair point,
she laughed. I tormented her a few minutes before pressing home. She owed. Being with her again felt better than the last time, and all the times before it. That was the issue with Emmabelle Penrose. She tasted like the greatest sin, and I was a well-known transgressor whenever temptation came knocking on my door. She came again before I spilled my seed inside her. I collapsed on top of her, spent, the jet lag catching up with me all at once. Bro, Belle said after a few seconds of my panting atop of her.
Heavy much? Get off of me.
I peeled away and took a seat on the chair in front of a desk, this time refusing to evacuate myself like a common prostitute. I had to establish some sort of authority with this wild child. I made a show of propping my legs on her messy desk and lighting myself a rolly, sinking idly in my seat. Aren't you going to ask how my England trip went? I sent a plume of smoke skyward, watching as it ribboned around itself. She hopped off the table and got dressed under the lamp, unbothered by the stark, unflattering light.
No, I don't give two shits what or who you do when I'm not around.
My father died. I ignored her sheer vulgarity. That made her stop. She made a show of pressing a fist against her lips, as if stuffing her words back inside.
That was a foot-in-mouth moment for me. I'm really sorry, Dev.
I'm not, I said flatly. But thank you.
How are you, handling things?
She shoved a leg into her leather pants. Quite well, considering I loathed him with every atom in my body.
I'm surprised Killian and Sam didn't say anything.
Belle watched me carefully for a reaction. Smart lass, we both knew I hadn't shared anything about my personal life with my mates. She must have wondered what business I had confiding in her of all people. I happened to wonder the same bloody thing. As far as sympathetic audiences went, she was a tad cooler than Antarctica. I keep my private life private. I exhaled rings of smoke, sending arrows into them. Still, Belle flipped her hair out of the back of a top and swaggered over to me, slinging herself against my desk.
Losing a parent is always hard, even if, and sometimes especially, you don't get along with them. It reminds you of your own mortality. Living is a messy business.
So is your desk, I commented, ready to change the topic. Why does it look like an Office Depot branch exploded all over it? She let out a laugh. I'm a messy person, Devon. Welcome to my life. That's not true. I swung forward, removing my loafers from her desk and sifting through the wrinkled and stained envelopes on it. You are highly calculated and driven. You have a 14-foot-high billboard of yourself bathing in a massive champagne glass and a business you could sell tomorrow and live comfortably. Yet there are piles upon piles of unopened letters here. Walk me through your logic. To reinforce my statement, I lifted a batch of a dozen or so envelopes in the air. They all looked handwritten and addressed to her personally. Swevin snatched them from my hand and dropped them into the bin beneath us. A witchy smile marred her face. I knew I'd hit a nerve. Why should I? They're not bills. Unlike some fax-using dinosaurs, I pay mine online. And they're not from friends because they would pick up the phone and call me. 99% of these letters are written by ultra-conservative lunatics who want to inform me that I'm going to burn in hell for running a burlesque club. Now, why would I put myself through that? Is that all these letters are? I pressed. Hate mail. Every single one of them. She picked up another batch, sliding one of the papers from an envelope. She cleared her throat theatrically and began reading. Dear Ms. Penrose, my name is Howard Garrett, and I'm a 62-year-old mechanic from Telegraph Hill. I am writing to you today in hopes you would change your ways and see the light, as I find you solely responsible for the corruption and venality, he spelled venality wrong, of our youth. My granddaughter visited your establishment the other day after seeing an ad with naked women about it in a local magazine. 3 days later, she arrived at my house to inform me that she was now gay. A coincidence? I don't think so. Queerness is, in case you are unaware, an act of war against God. Should I continue? She perched her chin on her knuckles, a faux angelic look on her face. Or did your brain short-circuit? He sounds like he's from the Stone Age. Maybe your neighbors, she smirked. There are dozens of letters here. Are all of them from religious old sods complaining about sex? I pressed. Belle was a basket full of complications, her job, her personality, her attitude, and yet I couldn't find it in me to back out of our arrangement. Yes, I'm sure, Belle scowled, plucking the cigarette from between my fingers and giving it a puff and returning it back to me. I'm a big girl. I can take care of myself. Being taken care of is not a sin. I know, she grinned devilishly at me with a wink. If it was, I would be all over it. Did you know there's a bird called a shoebill that looks uncannily like Severus Snape? Did you know Chinese water deer look like Bambi after he got himself a brand new mustache? She grinned back at me, and just like that, the tension between us was over. Belle's phone began dancing on the desk, flashing green with an incoming call. She craned her neck to see the name on the screen, let out a sigh, and picked it up. Hey. She hopped down from the desk and scampered as far away from me as possible in the tiny office. I could tell she didn't want me to stay during this conversation, which naturally made me find an even more comfortable spot so I could listen carefully. Yes, I'm doing good, thank you. And yourself? She asked, curtly. I was surprised with how pliant and polite she sounded, how completely not herself. There was no hint of the fireball who teased me a second ago. She stopped in front of a batch of pictures pinned to a corkboard by her window, fingering the colorful pins absently. It looked to be her family members, though I couldn't see from afar. Now's a good time. Why, did something happen? She asked. There was a pause while she listened to the person on the other line, then answered with an uncomfortable laugh. Yes, well, tell her I accept her invitation. What wine should I bring? Pause. Yes, I'm sure everything is fine. I'm just at work. Pause. Busy. Pause. I bought you all the fishing supplies. Now you don't have to pay me back. We're family. I'll bring them when I come. Something about her exchange with the mysterious person made my blood turn into ice. She sounded foreign, far away. She shed her personality like a snake before picking up the call. She finally hung up, rearranging her hair distractedly. Who was that? My dad. She made her way to the door, flinging it open. She tilted ahead in its direction. Out. Are your parents still together? I asked, in no hurry to vacate my spot behind her desk. I'd met them at a few family functions, such as Killian and Percy's wedding and the christenings of their sons, but I never paid close attention to either one of them. They were indeed as dull as their daughter was extraordinary. Happily, she tapped her foot impatiently. But that's another story to be told to someone I'm actually, you know, friends with. We're done now, Devon. Get out. I took my sweet time standing up just to spite her, asking myself for the millionth time why I was doing this. Yes, she was stunning, intelligent, and strong-willed, but she was also utterly horrible to me and any other man I'd ever come across. There was no thawing her. Even when we were physically together, she was so far away she might as well have been on the moon. His marriage might be happy, but his daughter isn't whenever he calls her, I said, strolling toward the door. Belle pounced over to the threshold, blocking my way out. A venomous, pained smile touched her lips.
Aw, Devi, I forgot to say no family talk.
Grinning, she really shouldn't have pushed me, I turned around and walked over to the pinboard, squinting to take a better look at it. Digging into people's Achilles heels until they screamed the truth was my specialty. I didn't want to do that to her, she was not a client, but Belle was also a woman who knew how to push all my buttons, and there weren't many. My suspicion proved to be right. Emma Belle had pictures of all of her family members, her mother, her sister, her nephews, and even some photos of that red-headed banshee she called a friend, Sailor, but not one of her father. The daddy issue theory is getting warmer, Swevin, I said on my way to the door.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm not the only one with daddy issues. You seem a little too glad your father passed.
Party's tomorrow night. Wear something fun, I quipped back.
Wowza, I'm no fortune teller, but I see a lot of therapy in your future, dude.
I'm perfectly fine with how I turned out. You, however, have a big fat secret, Emma Belle. And make no mistakes, I'm going to uncover it. As always, she slammed the door the minute I was out of it. As always, I laughed. It was only when I got back home when I noticed Belle's payback for my stuffing her cleavage with a cold drink. All in all, it was a lovely little surprise. A used pair of lady knickers stuffed in the front pocket of my slacks. Sitting at my study, I tugged it out, grinning at the pink, lacy fabric. I leaned back in my recliner, throwing my head back, giving it a hearty sniff. I draped the undies over my head and groaned with pleasure, getting a stiffy, when a note fell from them. I picked it up. Hey, Dev, you just sniffed my best friend Ross's balls. Hope you enjoyed. Swevin.
Chapter 8. Belle, 14 years old.
Gross,
I announced to the universe, because honestly, it is. Watching your parents make out in the front seat of their Honda Accord wagon like two teenagers is next level cringe. Percy doesn't seem to share the sentiment, sighing romantically beside me in the back seat. Let them be.
Nah, your sister's right. There's a time and a place for everything, and this ain't it.
Dad pulls away from Mom, dropping one last kiss on her shoulder before putting his hands where I can see them, on the steering wheel. To make matters worse, and you have to admit, shit's already pretty dire if I have to watch my parents exchanging saliva with nowhere to run, we're in the drive-thru line, about to pick up our burgers and milkshakes. Like I have an appetite after that makeout sesh. Burgers and shakes are a Sunday night staple and a decade-long Penrose tradition. Each week, we grab the food, drive to Piers Park, and annihilate greasy French fries and shakes while watching Boston's dancing lights. I've already decided that when I get married, a trillion years from now, I'm going to keep this tradition with my husband and kids. The car before us slides away from the drive-thru, and it's our turn. Dad rolls down his window and plucks a wad of cash out of his tattered wallet, waving it at the uniformed teenager in the window.
There you go, sweetheart. And I'll pay for the person behind us, too.
He does that every week. Pays for the person behind us. Sometimes it's a single mom in a beat-up car. Sometimes, like today, it's a group of rowdy college kids. Their windows are open, and a thick cloud of weed smoke curls up from their Buick LeSabre. That's very nice of you, sir, the cashier says, leaning forward to hand him the brown paper bags with our food and our drinks. Mom lets out a breathless giggle.
A little kindness goes a long way.
Dad drapes his arm along Mom's passenger seat. He beams at her like they're on their first date and he wants to make an impression. I wish Coach Locken would beam at me like that. I think he came close. Once. Locken is my track and cross-country coach, and I just happened to be the star of his mediocre team. A team I didn't even think about trying out for before he walked into my class on the first week of ninth grade and pleaded with us to try out for it. It's been a few weeks now, and I think I'm putting a real dent in getting him to notice me. That almost beam is my breakthrough. It happened in the cafeteria last week. He was on lunch duty that day. He looked rad in his blue windbreaker, our school logo emblazoned on it, khaki pants and trendy sneakers. He was way taller than all the other boys, even the seniors, and had stubble and dimples in his cheeks.
Stop looking at him,
Ross, my best guy friend, chided, ducking his head down at our lunch table.
He's a grown-ass man.
Like it ever stopped you before. I threw a French fry at him. Ross had just come out to me 2 weeks ago. Shocking, it was not. I noticed how we both shared the same appreciation of Channing Tatum while watching Magic Mike.
I only look. I don't touch.
Ross dodged the French fry like it was a bullet. I think he's been watching his weight since preschool. I don't touch, Mr. Locken. I pointed at him with a baby carrot.
Not yet.
He leaned forward and snatched the carrot between his teeth, chewing.
You always get what you want. It's actually kind of scary.
I snuck another glance at Coach Locken, and lo and behold, he smiled at me. Not just smiled, beamed. I was about to stand up and walk over to him, but then the rest of the cross-country team huddled in the cafeteria. All dudes. There was a cross-country team for girls, too, but I was so ridiculously better that Coach decided to let me practice with the guys. I wiped the floor with their asses, too, but at least they came somewhat close. Planting my butt on the bench, I cursed them inwardly. I couldn't be seen striking up conversation with Steve Locken now. People'd think I was pulling strings, cutting corners.
You need Jesus.
Ross shook his head when he saw the longing in my face. There's only one problem with Steve Locken. Well, two, if you count the fact that he is 29 and my teacher. He is also married.
Belly Bell, time to get out.
Dad twists in his seat and pats my knee now. I jump, startled. Oh, shit. Right, I'm with my family on a Sunday outing. I look out the window. We're at Piers Park. Tomorrow is Monday, which means early track practice in the woods, which means more Coach Locken time, which means bliss.
Look at the dreamy smile on her face. I miss those days when I was young.
Dad comments, pulling me out of my reverie.
What are you thinking about, sunshine?
Nothing. I unsnap my seatbelt. Everything, I think, as I make my way out of the car. Chapter 9. Bell. Turned out the ovulation kit I'd shelled out good money for at Walgreens was as necessary as sunscreen when taking a lengthy summer vacation on the sun. Because that month, after Devin had come back from England, we had sex every single day. You know, just in case. Actually, we sometimes had sex twice a day, which was totally unnecessary, and yet too much fun. I knew this wasn't something I'd revisit after I got pregnant, so I figured, why not? Apparently, the answer to the question, why not, could be found on medical sites. It explains that sperm count and quality decreases if couples do it every day. Joke's on them, because Devin and I weren't a couple. We'd meet in the mornings, after he got back from his fencing sessions and before he went to work, or during his lunch breaks, or whenever I happened to get in my 10,000 steps per day by his office and decided to stop by to say hello. Then again at night, after I was done with work. We screwed in every position, every hour of the day. Devin was always charming, cordial, and aloof. He accepted all my quirks and flaws, even when I was being deliberately unbearable, to remind him that I was not marryable. At the same time, his detachment scared the bejesus out of me. I'd never seen a guy so out of touch with his feelings. I figured, from his phone calls whenever we were together, that he was waiting for an important message from England. Something about his inheritance. He spoke to his mom on the phone. A lot. Cooing and doting on her in a way that made me happy he was going to be the father of my child. Even when he spoke to his sister, he always used a calm, sweet tone that made my bones turn to mush. In a way, it was really cruel of him to be so kind. A girl could forget to keep her guard up with such a perfect guy. That girl, fortunately, wasn't going to be me. Nice men are still men. Don't get close. Though I tried really hard to keep Devin at arm's length, I knew he was getting intimate glimpses into my life, into my family, into my story. I didn't like it. Which was why, when our arrangement hit the 4-week mark and I looked at the calendar and realized my period was a day late, I was filled with elation, tinged with mortification. There was a chance I was pregnant with a Marquis's heir. I held off the pregnancy test for 2 more days, which took Herculean effort. Mainly, I was scared. Scared of a negative result. What if the hormones didn't work? And scared of a positive result. A baby. I can't take care of a whole freaking baby. I can barely take care of a chia pet. In fact, I did not take care of my last chia pet. Ashling took it from me at some point and tried to save it, but it was too far gone. Finally, on the 3rd day, I bit the bullet, marched into Walgreens, and purchased a pregnancy test. I treated myself to the bougie-ass one, the 99.99% fancy test where it spells out the result for you. It dawned on me, on the way to the checkout, that nothing was quite as frightening as a pregnancy test. Each woman who bought one had very strong feelings about what she wanted to see. Pregnancy was not like whole wheat bread. You couldn't be indifferent about it. Either you really wanted to get pregnant, or you really didn't want to get pregnant. There was no middle ground. When the cashier slipped the test through the scanner, I noticed her glancing at my bare wedding finger. She curved a judgmental brow. Yeah, well, my kid is about to become English royalty, Karen. Smiling extra wide, I said, isn't that scary? Depends on your situation, she answered briskly. Yeah, mine is not that bad. I only have to figure out who the father is. She paled. I laughed. I grabbed the plastic bag and darted to work. I locked myself in the restroom, trying not to remember all the times Devin had devoured me on my desk, my chair, and on my floor during the weeks we were trying for a baby. Squatting over the toilet to pee on a stick, I decided to occupy myself by getting into my group chat with the girls while my pee worked its way along the pregnancy test. The group was always super active, so all I really needed to do was jump in. Sailor. Hunter wants to go to Cancun for the summer. Are y'all game? Percy. Sure. Just give me the dates and I'll tell Killian to block them off in his schedule. Ashling. Dunno about me and Sam. We want to visit Switzerland for a few weeks. I have to visit the clinic. Percy. Oh, yeah. Killian mentioned joining you guys in Zurich. Something about meeting with his bankers? Look at these bougie-ass bitches, making plans for the summer like it wasn't still winter time. Sailor. What about you, Belle? Up for margaritas poolside with the Fitzpatricks? Belle. As much as I want to feel like a third wheel in this basic bitch couple-a-thon, some of us have actual businesses to run. Sailor. Aunt Flo's in town, I see. Tuck your attitude back in, Belle. It's showing. She was so off base, it was comical. At least, I hoped she was. Percy. Come on, Aunt Belle Penrose, you work so hard. Our treat. I didn't want to be treated to things. I wanted to be independent enough to never rely on other people's good graces. It was something my sister, who had always been a romantic, couldn't fully understand. She was fine letting people take care of her because it was in her nature to take care of them. Even when she married Killian, it wasn't for his money. Not really. Belle, that's sweet of you, Perse, but I really do have a lot of work. Percy, don't say I didn't try. Sailor, don't worry, Perse. We'll tag team her when we see her. Belle, ah, just like in college. Only you're not the entire baseball team. Ashling, have you ever had a threesome, Belle? Ashling, and before you ask, yes, I'm blushing. Belle, more like reverse harem. I checked the timestamp on the beginning of the conversation and realized 6 minutes had passed. Taking a deep breath, I picked up the pregnancy test from the vanity in the restroom and closed my eyes. It's going to be okay. You'll get pregnant. You're doing this with a man who would move mountains to get what he wants, and he wants an heir. I flipped the pregnancy test over and popped my eyes open. Pregnant. The gasp that tore out of my throat rattled the walls. I was sure of it. There was joy and fear and delight in it. I was pregnant. I was going to become a mother. This was happening. Maybe. The trouble wasn't just conceiving, but keeping the baby, remember? A voice inside me cautioned. For a few moments, I didn't know what to do with myself. I paced around the small restroom, stopped by the mirror over the sink, and pinched my cheeks, screaming silently a la Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. A mother? Me. There was no one else I was going to need. No one but my baby. We were going to be there for each other. Finally, I would have someone else to take care of. Someone who would look after me the way Percy and I did before she married Killian and started her own tight-knit family. After pulling myself together, I snapped a picture of the pregnancy test and sent it to Devin. No caption was needed. I wanted to see his reaction. The two blue Vs signaling Devin had received and opened the message appeared on the screen. Then, nothing. 10 seconds. 20 seconds. After the 30-second mark, I began feeling uneasy, almost defensive. What the hell was his problem? I began typing a scathing message with plenty of profanity and a good dose of accusations when a call appeared on my screen. Devin Whitehall. I cleared my throat, adopting his bland, annoying tone. What up?
We make a good team, Slevin.
Devin's laugh echoed from the other side of the line, reaching the pit of my stomach. It made a stopover in my heart, making my pulse stutter unevenly. I wasn't expecting the joy in his voice. I wasn't expecting any kind of feeling from this Adonis statue of a man. I mean, we did work super hard and long on this, I sassed.
Don't forget thick.
I heard him lighting up a cigarette. I could never forget the thick part. It is the thing I'll remember you by when I'm old and wrinkly and you're long dead and buried next to your beloved fax machine.
The fax machine gets cremated. She wants her ashes to be spread in the ocean, and you know I can't refuse her.
Damn it. He was funny. In an odd kind of way. A baby, I whispered again, shaking my head. Can you believe it?
Still digesting.
He chuckled, but he didn't sound as overwhelmed as I was, for better or worse.
Well, it was indeed a pleasure to do business with you. I heard the hustle and bustle of his office in the background. I will, of course, begin wiring you an amount of $20,000 a month. We'll discuss your accommodations and furnishings for the babes' rooms in our respective places during the second trimester. Though, of course, as per our contract, I shall expect weekly updates from you. Okay. Technically, Devin didn't say anything bad. On the contrary, I told him I wanted nothing to do with his ass after I got pregnant, and he was just sticking to the script, to what we signed off on that night I stood him up at the opera. But I couldn't shake this weird feeling that I'd been discarded like an old sock. You wanted to be discarded like an old sock. In fact, you threw yourself headfirst into the laundry basket.
Duh,
I yawned audibly, pretending to be undeterred by his businesslike manner. Is email okay for the updates? I would fax them, but I'm under 75.
Email is great. We should also schedule a weekly call.
Now that sounded more personal. I'm down, I said, a little too quickly. What was wrong with me? Hormones, I decided. Also, I was going to celebrate by consuming my body weight in cake. I was now eating for two, even if the other person inside me was currently smaller than a grain of rice.
I'll have my secretary, Joanne, contact you about times and dates that suit both of us.
All right, scratch that, totally not personal. I'll probably have to see my doctor every week because my uterus is hostile and my ovaries are polycystic. I made a note to add this to my Tinder profile whenever I got back to the one-night stand pool. It made me sound like a real catch.
Not?
Swiven, Devin said. It felt like honey had been poured inside my guts when he called me by that stupid nickname.
I promise to be the father this child deserves. A better father than we both had.
His comment was like a bucket of ice poured over my fuzzy feeling. I never told him anything bad about my dad. He just made that assumption from the 2-minute phone call. But that was bullshit. My dad and I were perfectly fine, great even. I would totally shed a tear or two when he died, unlike cold and uncaring Devin, who looked practically relieved when his dad kicked the bucket. Not wanting to display any more emotion than I already had, I laughed throatily.
Speak for yourself, Devin. My dad is the bomb.com.
I may be 75, but at least you'd never catch me saying what you just said.
What was that?
I challenged. He chuckled.
Nice try.
How about a moment of zen? I offered. Let's talk about weird-ass animals. Have you ever seen a lowland-streaked tenrec?
Can't say that I have.
They look like bleached skunks who just woke up after a night of partying and MDMA and need to get their roots done.
What about markhors?
He asked.
They look like women in babyless commercials.
Have a great day, Swevin. Thank you for the good news.
After we hung up, I shot Dr. Bjorn an email informing him of the development and asking him if I needed to do anything other than eat well, sleep well, rest, and all the other mumbo-jumbo I'd already read about in the dozens of pregnancy articles I consumed on a daily basis. I reopened the chat with the girls, my fingers shaking with excitement. It was too soon. I knew that. And totally irresponsible, considering it was a high-risk pregnancy, but I was never really good at delaying gratification. Belle, I have news to share. Meet tomorrow at Boston Common.
Ashling,
absolutely.
Percy,
I think I know what it is, and I'm excited.
Sailor,
see you there.
I didn't need Devin. I had the Boston Bells. Chapter 10. Belle, 14 years old. The first time is innocent. I don't even think you can call it a first time. We're deep into 9th grade now. Exams, homework, girl cliques. I stay away from the white noise and stick to the goal. Running the fastest, making sure my baby sister Persephone and her friend Sailor are not getting picked on at school, and fantasizing about kissing Coach Locken.
during one of our grueling track practices. I feel a sharp pain in my knee. I keep running. I'm no quitter. But when Lachlan blows the whistle that's eternally tucked inside his mouth, I stop, limping my way back to him with the rest of the Harriers. I try to cover up my limp because I'm starting to understand something about human nature. When people smell weakness, that's when they pounce.
Shit, dude. That looks rough.
Adam Handler makes a face, jerking his chin in the direction of my knee. I look down, still wobbling over to coach. Shit, indeed. My knee is swollen and red. It's fine, I snap defensively. I can barely feel it.
What's happening here, Penrose?
Mr. Lachlan parks his fists on his waist. His voice is tender, softer than the tone he uses with the boys. No one ever calls him out on it. Why would they? I'm the only girl on the team, so people just figure, you know, it's about trying to make me feel welcome. Only I know the truth. The truth is that he's been beaming at me more and more lately, and that I've been beaming right back. I know it's wrong. I know he's married, that his wife is pregnant. I'm not dumb, but I'm not planning to take this anywhere. I just want to enjoy his attention. That's all. In a way, a truly screwed up, roundabout way, I even think I'm doing his wife a favor. As long as he keeps his eyes on me, he is in no danger of acting on his urges. At least he won't cheat on her. Anyway, it's dumb. I don't know her, and I don't owe her anything. And also, maybe it's just in my weird head. Maybe he is not looking at me after all. All good, coach. I smile through the pain, showing him I'm a trooper.
Doesn't look good to me. Come here.
I do. All the other boys surround me, toothpick legs and overgrown ears poking from their bodies. They all wince and point at my knee. Here comes trouble, as Dad loves to say. Coach Lachlan bends on one knee and frowns at my leg. I can feel his breath scraping my skin. It's hot and moist. Excited tingles chase one another down my spine.
I'll get you an ice pack. Wait in my office.
No, really, I'm good. My dumb mouth protests, even though my brain tells it to shut up and take advantage. I've never had one-on-one time with Coach Lachlan.
Nothing will be good when you're benched all season because of a runner's knee and I lose my cross-country star and you lose your scholarship.
Lachlan already has his back to me as he herds the rest of the boys to the locker room. I limp my way to his office, which is tucked at the end of the hallway. The door is open. I take a seat in front of his desk and let out a whimper because, hot damn, it does hurt. Looking for a distraction, I peer around me. There's a crap load of books about running on his shelves, a few trophies, and framed pictures of him hugging famous athletes. On his blonde wooden desk is his engagement picture with his wife. They're in some kind of a hayfield, kissing, and her hand is tilted to the camera to catch the diamond ring. She looks small and is a brunette and, I don't know, good. She looks like a nice person, not like all the things I hoped she'd be. I'm slammed with terrible, disgusting guilt for constantly fantasizing about him kissing me. This is stupid. I should get up and leave. Quit cross-country while I'm at it. Volleyball sounds more like my jam. I'm bracing the armrests, about to stand up when he walks into his office and closes the door. He is bigger than I remembered. Taller. He fills up the room. It reminds me of my dad, and I'm crazy about my dad. But Mr. Lachlan also still looks boyish enough that, unlike my dad, it's not creepy to think about kissing him. I lean back in my chair. Business as usual. Coach Lachlan lifts an ice pack in the air, then tosses it over to me.
Press.
I do as I'm told. The cold feels nice against my knee. I groan. I better get a scholarship. I don't even like running. He laughs, and to my surprise, drags his chair and positions it in front of mine. My heart beats 1,000 miles a minute.
How's it feeling now?
He asks. His timbre is low, gruff. Yeah, fine. I feel so dumb, so young, so juvenile. I wish I had something sophisticated to say.
something to blow him out of the water, to make sure he knows I'm more than just a kid.
Let me have a look.
He pats his knee, an invitation. I swing my gaze to him, uncertain what he's asking me for. Surely he's not suggesting.
Put your foot in my lap. I want to see what's the damage.
I do as I'm told, my chest swelling with pride. I'm pretty sure he'd never offer this to any of the other boys on my team. His lap is taut with muscle, hard as a rock. My leg is long and skinny, and if you look closely, there's a dusting of blonde hair covering it. He leans forward, removing the ice pack I'm pressing against my knee. He frowns.
Doesn't look any better.
It feels okay, I lie.
Try rotating your leg.
I try. Fail. I mean, I can do it, it just hurts like a motherfucker. Coach Locken releases a resigned sigh.
It'll help if we encourage some blood circulation. May I?
He lifts his hands, nice hands, I note, and keeps them in the air, looking at me questioningly. He wants to touch me. Really?
Just to get the blood flow back to the knee,
he explains. Duh. Of course. I have to get my mind out of the gutter. This is so embarrassing. I gulp, looking into those brown eyes. He kind of looks like Matthew Broderick in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Dorky hot. The kind of hot you can trust because the world still has expectations of him to behave. Honestly, I'm not even sure why I'm being weird about it. It's not like he's sexually harassing me. He is literally asking me if it's okay. A rapist would just jump on me without permission. I'm reading way too much into this. I nod, watching him through inquisitive eyes as he begins massaging my knee. It feels innocent. I'm at a stage where I'm curious about kissing and fondling and stuff, but penises are still a major turnoff. They're just so extra. Like, sit down, you don't have to stand there like a stripper pole every time someone takes their bra off. He pushes his thumbs toward my knee to help the circulation. The once sharp pain becomes mild now. I feel the muscles unknotting under his fingers.
Better?
Locken asks. I nod again, swallow, stare at his fingers, at his wedding ring, at the way his hands curl and massage the back of my knee now, the sensitive spot, and I giggle and squirm despite myself.
Your muscles are really tight.
His frown deepens. That damn wedding ring feels like fire every time it touches my skin. Why does it have to be there? He could have waited until I graduated. What's 4 years in comparison to a lifetime? And we could be together.
You need to work on your stretches, Penrose. Your muscles are shortening. Probably genetic.
Probably from my mom's side, I agree. Count on mom to pass down short muscles to me. His fingers hike up to my thigh. Now it doesn't feel all that innocent anymore. My body tingles, but there's also something else, a ball of anxiety in my throat. Yeah, I stammer, filling the silence, which has now become uncomfortable. I should stretch more. I'll add it to my nightly routine.
It's important.
My leg feels loose and pliant under his touch. I don't even mind that he can see I haven't shaved. God, this is so good. I throw my head back and groan. He chuckles.
You're lucky you're so talented, Penrose. Not everyone gets special treatment.
But is it my talent that makes him do this for me? His index finger flicks the edge of my track shorts once, close to my groin. I'm about to jerk back, but he pulls away completely, standing up. His smile is shy, but calm. He looks me straight in the eye.
All better.
Flustered, I grab the ice pack next to me and dart up. All better.
Let me know if you need help again. Anytime. Sometimes diamonds need a little rub to shine.
The same day, I raid my dad's bathroom, find a razor, and shave my legs all the way up to my groin area. I would go to him to massage my knee, my thigh, for the next 2 months, telling myself it's all for the scholarship.
Chapter 11. Belle. I met Ashling, Sailor, and Percy at Boston Common the following day. All three young mothers arrived with their strollers, babies, and 2 cents to weigh in on my situation. They were a reminder that soon I was going to have to transport myself from a world of thongs and nightclubs to the wonders of bamboo breast pads, burp cloths, and swaddles. My friends' strollers matched their personalities. Sailor pushed a city jogger. Sporty, efficient, and all black. A customer favorite, she boasted to me once when I was in a great mood and pretended to care. Persephone had the double bugaboo for both Aster and Quinn. Off-white and trimmed, though she strapped Aster to a dog leash and let him roam the park like a drunken chihuahua. Then there was Ashling, who had the silver cross Balmoral stroller. It looked classy, expensive, prim and proper, just like the woman it belonged to. Ambrose looked right at home inside it. We were all bundled up in our coats, striding through the tree-lined common, passing by the Freedom Trail and the soldiers' and sailors' monuments. The sky was a curtain of ice, clouds moving across in navy.